Welcome to All Together Now. This is Eleanor Lacaine. Nonprofit organizations have a tremendous impact in our communities and our country. Many nonprofits provide essential services from healthcare to housing in our neighborhoods. Other nonprofits organize for vital social change, such as pressing for action on climate crisis. In an era of shrinking government resources, nonprofits are more important than ever. Today we're talking about how to strengthen nonprofits so they can have maximum impact for social change. I recently discovered a group dedicated to exactly that called the Center for Excellence in Nonprofits. Here with us today are two leaders of the Center for Excellence in Nonprofits, Alicia Pete and Shauna Pete. Alicia Pete brings a wealth of experience to her work. She has served as a transformational nonprofit executive director, a real estate professional with a multi-million dollar portfolio, a corporate trainer, and an adjunct college professor. She is most proud of her ability to lead and unite a team of varying experience and inspire them to meet their goals. She earned a bachelor's degree from Western Michigan University in Human Resource Management and a master's in Business Administration from Ashford University with a focus in Global Management. Shauna Pete served as the first executive director of Partners for Change. She has a Bachelor of Science in International Business and a Doctor of Jurisprudence. She practiced law for 8 years. Additionally, she has managed a child development center, served as program coordinator for Read Aloud America, and managed a 30-person customer fulfillment team for Amazon. Alicia Pete and Shauna Pete, welcome to All Together Now.
Thanks so much for having us.
Good. Hey,
how are you
both there?
Happy New Year.
Excellent. So I'd like to start off, Alicia, if you could tell us, what is the mission of the Center for Excellence in Nonprofits?
So our mission is to improve the long-term sustainability of nonprofit leaders and organizations by offering the highest quality programs, consultations, and training, and a community building networks. And
that's
our
great.
Goal is to give executive directors and people that work in the nonprofit industry tools to help them continue to grow and be more successful at doing what they do, because so many executive directors only stay less than 2 years, industry says.
Wow, that's a lot of turnover.
Yeah.
So, Shauna, that's a big mission you've got there. What are some of the specific services that you offer to nonprofits to help them grow and be more successful?
Yes, we have a number of services that we offer in our community and in the U.S. at large. We offer what's called a boot camp experience, which is in longhand our nonprofit leadership certificate program. And that's a 3-day intensive where you get a cross-section of what we like to offer as training at CEN all in one shot. So there are opportunities for networking with other nonprofit leaders, and the topics covered go from nonprofit financials to an introduction to the nonprofit sector at large and kind of the history of how nonprofits started and how they look today, all the way into team building and how to put together a successful team and to make sure that it's focused on your mission. So that's one of the things that we offer. Another is workshops. We have individual workshops which cover some of those similar topics. For example, we have a nonprofit financials workshop. We offer another that would be on teams as well. But we have a lot of other topics to add to the mix. Basically, you could come and learn about resilience, or you could come and learn about, Illy, help me out here. What are some of the other topics that we train on?
We can train you on how to build a better team, how to select an executive director, how to inspire the team that you have, and things of that nature.
That sounds great.
I was going to just add that we do fundraising. We do how to sustain yourself through staff and ED transitions. We do things like strategic planning, how to get that process started for your organization. So our workshops can be, taken a la carte as opposed to the 3-day boot camp experience. And it's just a really great and approachable opportunity for nonprofits to be able to get the training that they so desperately need.
Yeah, that sounds great. You know, it's thousands. You probably know, like, how many nonprofits are there in the country? I mean, there's got to be tens of thousands, right?
Yeah, there are tens of thousands in Northern California.
Oh, my goodness.
It's a staggering number of nonprofits that are operating in the United States. And we are based in California, so that's kind of where our knowledge is. But, yeah, did you have something to add, Illy?
I will say with the boot camps, it's amazing that when people come in, we have people that are newer leaders or in positions that are not executive directors, and then we also have the executive directors and CEOs. And it's very interesting to see how that dynamic plays out and how everyone in the room gains knowledge and information and understanding and insight into the other people in the room and their positions.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like you provide vital services for really strengthening nonprofits, particularly now at a time, you know, it's very hard to raise money and keep a nonprofit going. I would imagine there's a lot of, you know, new ones that emerge and then older ones that kind of die off. And It seems like if organizations could take advantage of the services that you offer, it would help bring some stability to an organization. And the key, I think, is what you're doing, you know, train the leaders and how they can be effective leaders for the nonprofit. So how do you work? Do you, maybe, Sean, if you could explain, do you go on site as a consultant to each nonprofit, or you work regionally, or do you just work in California, or like how do you deliver your services to the nonprofits?
Yes, well, we are open and available to nonprofits all over the U.S., and primarily our base is in California. Our offices are located in Redwood City, California, Northern California, for your listeners who may not be as familiar, but we help organizations in all parts of the U.S. What that looks like typically is on your day-to-day, we have regular workshops, between 2 and 4 a month that we offer, and those are at rotating locations here in the Bay Area, so people can register and attend a la carte, as I mentioned before. Sometimes people opt to come solo. Sometimes they bring their entire team with them or their entire board with them. If you were to arrive at a workshop, you could expect to see that. If we were talking about the boot camp, the Nonprofit Leadership Certificate Program, again, we probably do, 4 to 6 of those a year. And those are offered at rotating locations also, typically within the Bay Area. And again, some are for individuals, and sometimes they're set up to allow for teams to come. And beyond that, we offer private consultations that are more customized for the needs of a particular organization. So very regularly we get inquiries about, just this week, we were asked to prepare a customized training for a private organization that wants to encourage its staff, its team members, to begin to think philanthropically and to begin to start serving in their communities. They have something like 500 employees, and they're kind of all over the U.S., and so they're bringing us in to help those folks who are showing an interest in doing just that know how to be good board members, know how to be good allies in the private sector for the nonprofit space. And so what we can do is we'll go in to these organizations that come and ask us with these different requests, and we'll present at their organization. So we do take our show on the road also.
Mm-hmm. And the other thing that I think you left out was our Leaders Institute. And that's where we really have a strong program that helps to empower executive directors. And that starts with a 3-day or a 2-day overnight workshop. And then we meet with the leaders monthly for 8 months. And we talk about many different topics. A lot of those topics they have selected. We also provide them with coaching, and that's one of our most successful programs, and we are very proud of it and have had good feedback from it. In fact, I was a participant in the Leaders Institute program when I was an executive director, and it gave me such, it really boosted my confidence, and it gave me tools to maneuver through what I was dealing with at the time. The other thing that it gave me was the ability to know that I was not alone. And it gave me a network of people to talk with and brainstorm with and try to move forward with. And it didn't just stop at Leaders Institute. We have roundtables that go on after that so that you still have that support when you need it most.
That sounds great. And Alicia, you were talking about, all the different nonprofits that you're working with. Can you give a specific example of a nonprofit that you worked with in the past year or two and what you did through the Center for Excellence in Nonprofits, like how you helped that particular nonprofit?
Because of non-disclosures, I can't necessarily mention the name of an organization, but one that's really dear to my heart is an organization that was started because of the loss of a child during a shooting. And then they experienced another loss. And they found themselves kind of down and out. And they needed to reconnect to the mission and the vision of the organization, and we needed to bring the board members together to speak in one voice so that they could continue to move the organization forward and help all the people they had helped for so long. Shauna, how would you what would you add to that?
I would definitely say that we were able to give them tools to see, not that they weren't, but tools to better ensure that they were able to see each other, on a human level and, aside from the work and show up for one another as people. And then we were able to help them with tools to help them show up for one another as an organization. And so, help them to map out, we've suffered these great traumas. We started in trauma, we're suffering another acute trauma. How do we move forward as an organization and where are we headed? And we were able to, kind of let the dust settle a little bit and give them hope and a vision for the future. And that was one of the most impactful instances of having worked with a nonprofit for me as well.
Yeah, that's very impressive. It's hard when people experience a trauma and lose their focus to kind of get over the emotional experience of loss, and that's great that you help them kind of move through that and come out with greater hope and vision. How many organizations would you work with in a given, in 2019, how many organizations has the Center for Excellence in Nonprofits worked with?
Well, that's a tricky question to answer.
Is kind of a moving target.
We could answer it in a number of different ways. We are a membership organization, and currently we have about 200 active members, and we're growing. But over the years, we have easily touched over 6,000, and we do so on an annual basis. And one example, where we came into contact with at 1440 Multiversity over in the Santa Cruz Mountains, there was an event called Service Week, wherein they open up their campus to nonprofit leaders from all over the country and the world to sort of provide respite from the hard work that they do, the chance to connect and to receive training, and to receive healing and time off, you know, rest. And there were something like 275 organizations represented and about 470 attendees. And so just in 5 days, by being present, by offering our workshops, we had a reach of 500, 475. But we participated
and I would
in
also
the idea
say
of partnering
that
with other organizations
we...
in the industry, so that we can take our message out into the world and put it in front of the people who need it most. And so very easily you could say, you know, within an annual space, 5,000 to 6,000 people we're touching.
And I would also add to that that what you'll find is that when people come and get the information, they go back and share it with their teams and their staff and maybe fellow executive directors that don't have the funds or the ability to attend the programs. So while we say that the reach is about 6,000, I think it's exponentially more than that.
Yeah, I think that's true. And Shauna, you mentioned Multiversity. That's where I met the two of you last month. And I hadn't heard of it before. Of course, I live on the East Coast, so I know it's really made a mark out there on the West Coast. But Shauna, since you brought it up, could you describe a little bit more, like, what is this 1440 Multiversity? It's a really fascinating concept and well done, but could you explain it a little more to our listeners, what happens there?
Sure, absolutely. It is one of the most beautiful spaces. Let's start with that. It was a former Bible college nestled in the Santa Cruz Mountains, as I mentioned, that was bought by Scott and Joan Kreese, and they basically had a dedication and a determination to provide a physically beautiful space for rejuvenation and wellness. And they do that for people, you know, on an individual level. People can come and just enjoy retreat services and time away and an opportunity to commune in nature with 12 to 1,500-year-old redwoods. but also organizations, whether they are for-profit or nonprofit, can go there for their retreats and for things like that. So they have a constant offering of curriculum. And it's curriculum that appeals to the mind and the body and the spirit. It's the best way I would describe it. I'm not from 1440, but that's sort of what I would describe it as. And we've been really fortunate at CEN to partner with 1440 in order to bring about Service Week where we were able to meet you. And it was just, it was a fantastic experience, at least in my view.
Yeah, I thought it was one of the most amazing weeks of my life. I was so excited to find these wonderful benefactors there who had created this amazing, as you say, really beautiful space in the midst of the redwood forest right near the California Pacific Ocean, and so, you know, healthy food and comfortable surroundings and full of all kinds of trainings. Like you did the training there on building a team that I participated in, which was fantastic. And, you know, all kinds of other things, financials. I think it was another person from the Center for Excellence in Nonprofits who did the training on financials for nonprofits, which was also very good. So let's talk a little bit about that training. And Alicia, the two of you, I should mention, by the way, you have not only the same last name, but you are sisters, and you're working together. And I consider you like the dynamic duo for uplifting nonprofits nationally. So I'm very grateful that you're working together to help uplift nonprofits. Alicia, since you were co-leading this.
In?
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. Yeah,
co-leading the workshop on building a team. Can you describe a little bit, like, how, if some one of our listeners is volunteering or running a nonprofit, like, what do you recommend? How could they build more effective teams?
Well, I think the first thing is knowing yourself and then knowing the people that surround you And we call it speaking to people in their work love language. And I think it's important that as leaders, we do that so that everybody on the team is heard and they feel valuable, and they feel valuable enough to contribute in a way that maybe you aren't able. The other thing that I believe in and that we try to impress upon our leaders is I have areas of opportunity, things that I'm not very good at, and I have a tendency to surround myself with other people that have those strengths, because then as a team, we can unite and we can become stronger. There are different work styles, and it's important that when you are hiring and when you are putting a team together, that those things are considered, because that has a direct impact on how successful your team will be.
Excellent. And you've now been working with many, many organizations, you know, both before you got to the Center for Excellence in Nonprofits, and even more so now that you've been there with this pretty big reach you've got in helping the organizations. I'm going to ask each of you to answer this, starting with you, Alicia. What are the top three things you think nonprofits need to know to be able to survive and thrive in our current climate that they need help to be strengthened on? The top three needs.
Being resilient.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's very critical, because if we don't take care of ourselves and take care of our teams, the likelihood that we will stay in our position is not going to be as long. And as I said, studies are showing that people are leaving our sector, and they are so valuable. And we have to figure out a way to give our teams and our leaders what they need so that they're willing and excited about staying. The other thing that I really feel like that nonprofits need to know is how to empower the people that we work with so that they can help us grow and be better and create an environment of philanthropy. As an executive director, everyone that was in my organization was a philanthropist, from volunteers to donors to staff to board. We all understood that as an organization, we had to believe in it and give to it to encourage others to do so. The last thing that I would say is the power of your thank you being immediate. And I say that because so many times we get gifts and we get donations in, and we take a week or two or three to give a thank you. Can you think of a time when you've made a donation and you get a thank you letter in your mailbox 2 days later, within 48 hours? Your thought is that your dollars are appreciated and recognized. And so many nonprofits do not get those thank you notes out in that time frame. And it's critical because it makes others, or it makes those people, want to continue to support you because they know that they are thanked and they're appreciated.
I would extend that to include being sure to thank our volunteers that, you know, that may be our board members, or it may be the people who are in the trenches providing services and programming. And we just really want to make sure that we let each, you know, step of the process know how valued they are and how much we're appreciative of their being there.
Yeah, fantastic. And so, Shauna, in your work with the nonprofits, what do you see as, like, the biggest need that you feel like you're addressing through your work at the Center for Excellence in Nonprofits?
I would echo what Illy said, but I would also add a couple of others. I see a huge need for nonprofits to learn to work together and to do it more frequently. A lot of times we feel like we're in a silo and we're doing the work just in a vacuum. And it's very easy to find yourself there because of the demands of the job. And so often we are working kind of within the scarcity model where we don't have all the things that we need to do what we're there to do and do it to the best of our abilities or the best that it could possibly be done. And so sometimes it's tempting to feel like, oh, I'm in the hamster wheel. I got to keep at it. Where, you know, my message to the folks that I work with is take a moment and survey the landscape and see who's moving in the same direction as you. And maybe they're moving in the same direction, but in a whole different lane. And if you can find a way to connect with, you know, what they're doing and their mission and keep it connected to your mission at the same time, you all may be able to lift each other up. So that is one thing that I think is really important for nonprofits to think about. The other would be, and it may sound cliche at this point, but I definitely think that we're not in a place where we don't need to hear it anymore yet, but to keep diversity in the top of your mind. And a lot of times, and Eleanor, I'll ask you, when you hear the word diversity, what first comes to your mind?
Making sure that we have people of, you know, have women, have people of color, have people of different cultural backgrounds, maybe people of different languages, depending on your constituency. You want to have a lot of different voices at the table to make sure you don't have a blind spot in what you're trying to do.
Well, you know, you get the gold star. that's absolutely 100% what I'm hoping to impart when I use that word. So often people think about it in very limited terms. They might think, oh, that means ethnic diversity, or oh, you mean, you know, if I live in California, people who speak Spanish. But it can be so much broader than that. It can be all the things that you named, and then you can add, you know, gender identity, sexuality. You can add points of view, political views, you know, all decision-making styles, all manner of ways to constantly push yourself as an individual, as a leader, and as an organization to feel uncomfortable. that you have to find the comfort and the discomfort of diversity. And, you know, the studies are showing time and time again, the more diverse our groups are, the higher we perform, the better the satisfaction is of the team. And you're really, like you said, calling more people to the table, and you're hearing more voices, and you're allowing your nonprofit to reach into the far corners that maybe it wouldn't if everybody were of the same mindset or of the same whatever it may be. So for me, that's the thing that I, you know, I really do make it an effort to incorporate that message into pretty much every training and workshop that I'm involved in.
And just to add, Shana, on that, I think so much of the time when we bring in diversity, we don't bring in support of those people that we're trying to bring into the fold. Without that support and that understanding and that true commitment, diversity is just a word. It has to be, as she said before, making the uncomfortable rather more comfortable or a little bit more comfortable. And it's difficult. But it's necessary, and it's a way that we, as a sector, move forward.
Right. Very true. And one of the challenges that I've seen in nonprofits where I've been either on staff or on the board or volunteering, that they all seem to struggle with fundraising. I mean, unless you happen to work for Bill Gates or a billionaire who's got a, you know, philanthropic group. But most nonprofits really wrestle with this issue of how do we raise the money to keep our programs going? What would, we'll start, Alicia, with you. What would you say to a nonprofit that's like struggling financially? We need to make more money so we're not hand to mouth to meet payroll every month. What would you recommend that they do?
The first thing that I would suggest is they consider partnering with other organizations, again, because when you're partnering with other organizations, you're lifting one another up. The other thing that I would say is that sometimes you have to go back and look at what you're doing and change it. I was the executive director of an organization where they were striving so hard to get money, they had mission drift. And they were funding, they were funded by all these different entities, but it wasn't centered in our mission. And so as the executive director of that organization, I decided to create five pillars of service. And if grants didn't fit in those five pillars, I no longer went after them. And we did not reapply. And that was a struggle. That was hard to let money go. But rather than being an organization that was a jack of all trades, we became a master in five areas. And so my dad used to always say, all money ain't good money. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you have to not hold on so tight to money that you shouldn't be going after, when you should focus on what your strengths are and how your strengths are going to help you to move forward. The other thing that I would say is education is a wonderful way to kind of counteract that. So many people that serve on boards can't read the financials, don't really know how to negotiate through them, or they don't understand that the financials are telling the story of an organization. And through education sometimes, it can help those organizations move past the struggles of fundraising and fund development. The last thing I would say is you have to value those that are already giving to you.
Mm-hmm.
It costs you so much less to keep the people that are donating to you than it is to recruit others. So I would take care of the ones that you have and make them feel special and make them know how much you appreciate what they're doing. And if they are long-time donors, be willing to sit down with them and try to up the ante and try to increase what they're giving. That's so important for an organization.
Well, those are really excellent lessons that you've learned there in the fundraising. Shana, do you have anything to add for a nonprofit that needs to really strengthen their fundraising ability? What else might you add?
I sure do. It's interesting at CEN, we are a staff that's made up primarily of people who either are, you know, our current ED and also like who have served as EDs. So I'm another one. And I was in a startup organization at one point as an executive. And the thing that came so clear to me was that in that situation and then getting to know other nonprofits in my geography at the time, we were so excited about the idea and pressed to fundraise. And I really realized we had to take a step back and make sure that we were clear on our vision and make sure that we were always keeping the mission first and foremost in what we do. And it's so easy for us as nonprofit leaders, whether you're an executive or whether you're a manager or any other role, when you're exhibiting that leadership, it's important for us to make sure that the people on our teams, the people on our boards, the people that volunteer for the organization that are also going to be your ambassadors when they're out in the street, are clear on the mission and are clear on the vision of where your organization is headed. And once you start peeling back the layers on those questions, you know, a lot of times we hear people say, oh, no, we're clear on that. We know what we're doing. Mm-hmm. And then we do an exercise periodically where we have people share their version of what the organization's mission is.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes for as many people as there are in the room, that's as many explanations of what the mission is. And sometimes just taking that pause to ensure that everyone is on the same page and then ensure that you're speaking in one voice, it can be so powerful so that when you go and you are, as a staff person, applying for grants or appealing to donors, you have a very clear vision and you have clear language that's agreed upon, and you can speak with confidence about who you are and where you're headed. And when you give that gift to your the staff that reports to you or to the people who are being ambassadors that are not paid, you know, volunteers, it's amazing how much farther you can go. A lot of times we're tempted to just skip that step and think, yeah, we got it.
Right. Well, I think you're exactly right. I mean, so many groups that have seen, you know, if there's a problem with fundraising, I automatically think it's never really just about the fundraising. Mm-hmm. It's also, it's fundamentally at the core, it's about a lack of clarity on your mission or your vision of what you're trying to do, that you don't have everybody pulling in the same direction. That's kind of number one. And number two is something that Ilyasha talked about, the education that the board members, the staff, everybody involved learn to tell a story of the organization, but also how people feel about raising money. And at the Multiversity that you mentioned was, I think, the world's greatest fundraiser, who was also doing a seminar on how to raise money for nonprofits. And she's raised over $400 million herself and trained lots of people. This is Lynn Twist of the Soul of Money. And I've learned from her. I think I went first to her seminar 10 years ago, and then I went again last month. And I just, you know, I've done some work to see where in my own self did I have any resistance to asking for money. And flip it around, that you're not kind of a beggar going to a rich person to say, please give me some crumbs from your table, that you're out there in the world actively trying to make a better place, and you share values with that person, and you're giving that person an opportunity to put their resources into the direction of helping to make the world a better place by supporting the work you're doing. And I think that mind shift right there could really help pretty much all the organizations, all the nonprofits that are working for better communities. Would you say those were significant?
I would, definitely. And what we teach at CEN is that you are offering people the opportunity to give money so that it makes them feel good. So when you don't ask, you are taking that opportunity away from someone that's willing and wanting to serve in that way. The other thing I will say is that when you are fundraising, it's critical that you know what the impact of your work is, and that your impact is directly related to the service, to the people that you're servicing. So much of the time we think we're doing good in the world and whatnot, but if the money that we're trying to raise doesn't resonate with those that we are trying to encourage to give, and if it doesn't resonate with those people that we're trying to serve, that can be a problem. I've worked in an organization where we did a campaign that we had a gentleman come in literally like off the street, and he saw our campaign and he said, I don't have a lot of money, but I've got this $5 and I truly believe in what you're doing. And fundraising is about working with the heart and making sure that everyone feels like they're giving in a way that helps move the mission forward.
And that's right. And I want to add, it's about, you know, I always say, who am I? Who am I to get in the way of allowing this person the opportunity not only to feel good, but as Illy was describing, to do good in the world? And if I take myself, my ego, out of the equation, asking for financial support to further that end feels very different and a lot less intimidating.
Right, exactly. So I love that. I just read a wonderful fundraising letter today from Elizabeth Warren, who said, I just talked to a man in New Hampshire who had lost his job, and he is contributing $2 a month to the campaign. Mm-hmm. They said, you know, you just do what you can do. If you can do two, great. If you can do 200, great. You know, whatever you can do, pitch in and join the team. And I just think that's such a wonderful attitude, you know, that attitude of gratitude that really helps help build. The other thing that I noticed in your background about helping nonprofits thrive also, not only by raising money, by asking for donations, but also by focusing on fee for service. So,
yes.
Would you like to speak to that?
I would love to.
Yeah, so I will use our resident expert on this one.
Where we're really trying to look for other income sources. And what we decided to do was create a program that put equipment that people needed and the people that needed it together. And what we were able to do in doing this is kind of encourage people to make donations for the equipment that they needed to survive. And that program in 1 year increased by 100%.
Wow.
It was the most remarkable thing I've ever seen. And CEN is another example of a fee-for-service model that works. You know, since 2017, I think we've doubled our budget. But that's because we listened to what people wanted, and we are giving what they requested in the way that they requested it.
And we're making it accessible.
I am a big advocate for fee-for-service because when you are mm-hmm. going to a funder and you can present a fee-for-service model, they feel like you can sustain yourself after they go away or if they have to go away. So if they're going to do a short-term type of grant, a fee-for-service model makes them feel safe that the program that you're starting is going to continue even if they shift their focus somewhere else.
Right, that's fantastic. So so you do a combination. I'm kind of curious about this whole idea of the Center for Excellence in Nonprofits because you yourself are a nonprofit, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you're a nonprofit that helps nonprofits. And to tag on with what Illy was saying just now, we do have a fee-for-service model, and we are also very conscious about making sure that it is available and accessible, and that means, you know, in every sense of the word, financial included, for nonprofits to take part in what it is that we have to offer. And that's very important and one of our core values.
Yeah, so I'm wondering, it's a question I had when I met you two Wonder Women there. You're providing such essential services to nonprofit groups which are doing incredibly important work in the communities and around the country. And there's so many nonprofits who need what you have to offer. And just kind of wondering, how do we bring more up to scale what you have to offer? Like, how do we get you out in a bigger way? I mean, I'm happy to interview you on my radio show, and I know our listeners are going to be spreading the word and learning about what you're doing. How do we bring the work you're doing at the Centers for Excellence in Nonprofits and bring it to scale so more of the groups who need what you have to offer can benefit from it?
Can I start the answer to that question? And Illy, feel free to jump in if you feel so moved. First, I would just say that I think it's a change of mindset in the nonprofit industry in that we have so many nonprofits and nonprofit leaders that have been around for, you know, decades and decades. And unlike the for-profit space, one of the things that's very clear to me right now is that nonprofits can operate kind of without expertise sometimes. And what I mean by that is if I wanted to start a for-profit, you know, and I thought, man, I should make widgets, probably one of the first things I would do is either I would become an expert or I would hire an expert to help me create the best widget. And then we put it out to market and we go from there. Whereas with nonprofit, it's very different. We're comprised of people who see a need in the community, and then say someone should do something about that. And then they decide that somebody is them, right, themselves. And they go forward. And a lot of times they don't get the skills or the education on how to do so well and how to do so effectively and efficiently. So I think creating an awareness that even if you have operated for a long time, even if you are doing pretty well, there is still space for education and knowledge and growth on how to catapult what you're doing into something even bigger and better. So that would be kind of my first thought there. Illy, did you have anything to add from there?
Yeah, I kind of echo what you're saying. I really feel like the educational component is critical. And sometimes we don't have a lot of money and we think that we can't afford it. My thought is sometimes you can't afford not to do it. Mm. Because the lessons that you learn, there's a cost, and that cost is donor money. So when you know how to move forward in a proven fashion, it saves you money in the long run, and it makes you more committed to and clear on the mission and how it should be achieved. I think so much of the time our nonprofits operate from the scarcity model. And as nonprofits, we're going to have to shift that in many ways to try to sustain ourselves and better than that, start to thrive.
And then to tack on, to kind of more directly answer your question, Eleanor, about how, you know, to be supportive of what CEN does and what we stand for, you know, we, like you mentioned, are a nonprofit organization, so we not only try to teach these things to the nonprofit space and the leaders within that space, we have to follow these things ourselves. And so we are out there trying to model these behaviors that we're talking about today, and we are doing all that we can for our current donors and to grow our donor base. And so obviously, you know, it's the nonprofit world. Financial security is a great way to secure your stability as an organization. So that's one avenue. The other is through partnerships. You know, you're having us here on your radio show and, you know, amplifying what it is that we do. And we welcome opportunities to partner with other organizations that see what we do as so critical to the growth of the sector. And, you know, we have, since 2017, doubled in size. You know, our classes are doing tremendously well. We are constantly developing new content. And, you know, as we mentioned, we have, you know, the boot camps, and we have the workshops, and we have Leaders Institute and roundtables and all of these different ways of maintaining the nonprofit community in a holistic way for the individuals, for the people, as they contribute to the sector. And so just, you know, any way that people can, you know, find to support, you know, whether it's the financial or the partnering or the communication of our message, we would welcome it.
That sounds great. And how can our listeners learn more about your work? Do you want to tell our listeners, like, where's the website? How can they get in touch with you?
We are our website is cen.org.
Excuse me. Go ahead. Say that again for me, Ellie. I think I cut you off.
The website is cen.org, and that will answer a host of questions. Also, if you need to contact us directly, my email is illy@cen.org, and Shana's is Shana, shana@cen.org. And we welcome the opportunity to help sometimes just make connections that will help you or organizations like these nonprofits thrive and move forward. And sometimes it's not a situation where we will be the person or the organization that will help. We partner with other organizations that are experts in other areas if we cannot help. And we're willing to we're more committed to helping the organizations find what they need to thrive in the future.
Yeah, that's great. I mean,
it's a great place to start.
Mm-hmm. Fantastic. Well, I know a nonprofit right now, for example, and what they're struggling with is trying to build a board. So is that something like, do either of you have expertise? Like, what would you say to this organization? Is, oh, well, we have to expand our board with people who understand our mission and support it and help raise money. How would they even begin to think about that?
I think you would start with the board matrix. Yesterday met with a couple of nonprofit board members that are in the exact same situation, and the advice that I was offering to them, and I would offer it to the person you're speaking of, is please, please, please do not operate as though you are living in scarcity. So often it's tempting for nonprofits to just want a warm body to fill that seat on the board. And I think it's incumbent on nonprofits to value the work that you do and the value you bring to the community a little bit more, and make sure that when you extend that invitation to someone, it's for the right reasons and they're filling a true need, and you're communicating the value that they bring and you're matching that with expectations for them.
And if you remember that, it's not only you choosing them, they must choose you as well.
Mm-hmm.
It has to be a fit for both parties in order for it to work. And the other thing that I would say is, we've spoken about diversity. I really encourage you not to just pick a person specifically for that reason. Mm-hmm. We want to make sure that all of the boxes are checked and that it's a good fit all the way around.
Right. That sounds like excellent advice. Well, you are two amazing dynamite women. I'm so excited you're out there helping nonprofits. And I encourage our listeners, if you're connected in any way to a nonprofit, please check out the Center for Excellence in Nonprofits. And I did want to ask you on a personal basis before we sign off, your mother raised at least two remarkable women here. And what do you think your mother did right?
Wow. Well, thanks for that. She'll be stoked to hear it. I'm sure she's going to be somewhere listening. But she was an executive director during her career as well. And one of the things that I would say she did for me, and I won't speak for both of us, but she not only worked in nonprofits, she was a civil rights activist and leader, and she always, always stressed the importance of looking out for your fellow man or woman, or anything in between nowadays, making sure that when you are able to break through a glass ceiling or a closed door, you hold it open for the people that come behind you. Mm-hmm. And I know that that has definitely dictated my path and ordered my steps in my own life, and I'm really appreciative for my mom, Ellen, who did that for me. And I would very much echo that. But I think the other thing that she gave us was the ability to have confidence in ourselves and in our decisions, as well as being willing to speak up for those that can't speak up for themselves, and the commitment to make a change and be a part of that change and make it part of who you are and who you strive to be.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Ilyasha Pete and Shayna Pete. Thank you for being with us today, for all your important work.
Thank you so much, Eleanor.
Thank you so much.